Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In this league, to score points, you got to have explosive plays, or unless you can just methodically move the ball down the field, play, you know, 12-play drives, 13-play drives, and that doesn't happen a lot against these defenses. Some of these defenses are really good, so when you have a chance to have an explosive play, you want to get it. That being said, we've done some things that way, but turnovers don't let us do some of the other things we want to do by throwing the quicker passing game and doing those things. We have a variety of things that we like to do that we haven't just been able to do yet, and we're working through that. I think we'll start seeing more phases of our offense as we move through this season. You know, obviously, the quicker you can get the ball out, the better it is for the offensive line, the better it is sometimes for the quarterback, but everybody knows that, just what you just said. So defensive coordinators are starting to sit on that. It's a chess match every week. As an offense, you want to be able to dictate, and then there's some games you got to take what the defense is giving you, and that's just part of it.
I certainly hope that we'd be more productive on offense and that we would be 2-0 right now, but when you do have a rookie quarterback back there, obviously everyone else has to raise their game, because no matter how good they are as rookies, how prepared they are, Deshaun's as prepared as any rookie I've ever been around, but there's still a huge gap with what they know and understand versus a quarterback that's been in the league 8 or 9 or 10 years.
I think it's on us now to get back to the drawing board and, you know, prepare as well as we can to, you know, come out and play well against Indianapolis. You know, you go 4-0 in the preseason and you get a little taste of winning in your mouth. And you could feel in the locker room the vibe was, you know, ecstatic. Everyone was excited to get out there. Obviously going through two losses in our first two regular season games kind of took that away from us. Now we want to get back to that.
Everybody understands who they are. I mean, it's a heck of a team. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But, I mean, for us, every single week, there's an outstanding team that you play with outstanding talent. So we take them one at a time as they come. It's the biggest game of the year for us because it's the next one. And that's how we look at it. I mean, you think you have a good feel for it, but it's just like anything else. You have to get matched up against some folks before you really start to say, you know what, you may believe we're pretty good. I think we're pretty good. The proof is in the pudding. Let's go see. Let's go see how we measure up. Let's go see how we match up. You know, I get excited about that end of it. Yeah, you think you know, you think you have an idea, and I don't think there's any season that any coach goes into thinking the opposite of that. If he does, he better get in a new line of work. You know, we all look forward to that great challenge, and we all want to see where we are, and we think we have an idea, but, you know, let's see how it plays out.
It was a little bit eye-opening for me when I heard, we hear about this CTE, and obviously as football players and just people in general, and you're trying to figure out what is this and how does this occur. And I think the more we gather information and the more information we have is good for everyone involved, whether you play football or not. How does it take place for this young man at a young age? So I want to know. I mean, he's 27 years old. I mean, he hadn't played that much football in his life.
All I know in this particular case, the league has not seen a copy of the suit and that they were unwilling to comment at this time. There are a lot of concerns with this, right? It's become a very trendy, apropos, disconcerting topic for the NFL. It's
playing the game that we play is risk in the game. I try not to think about that, but I know it's a good possibility just because of, you know, playing a game at a high level, it's always a possibility in the future. I don't think this is going to go anywhere. You could change all the helmets you want to change. As long as you tackling and hitting each other, it's going to always be some type of concussion or some type of risk involved in football. We can cut that out about let's change helmets and let's change this. The fact of the matter is, it's a collision sport. So it's going to be things that happen. I don't care, you know, how much you want to change, but I'm not saying don't change, but you have to understand, as long as there is contact in sports, you're going to have problems.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Friday. I am not. I welcome you to the show. I want you to listen. I want you to participate if you so desire at 866-240-1065. I want you to hear the outstanding guests that we have today. Scott Petrak will talk a little NFL with us coming up at about 3:35. Bill Clark will talk high school football with us coming up at about 4:35, 4:40, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm going to give you a chance at Sam Hagar tickets later on this hour. That's a good thing. I'm going to give you a chance to qualify for the Ticket European Vacation coming up at about 4:20, somewhere in that 4 o'clock half hour. All of that stuff is great. But I will tell you, I'm not in a mood today. I'm not in a good mood at all today. Once again, and it's a strange convergence of stories here that have my blood just about set to boil, both having to do with football, with CTE, with concussions, with allegations that football isn't safe, and then one of the most despicable, reprehensible, filthy, money-grubbing scumbag defense lawyers trying to milk the NFL for $20 million on the back of a dead murderer that I've ever seen. So they all blend together in some weird, strange confluence of circumstances. And so I want to dive right into that in this monologue. Number one, we know that the brain of Aaron Hernandez, the reprehensible piece of trash murderer from the New England Patriots, who was a scumbag, filthy thug going all the way back to his college days, his brain has been found to have had advanced stage 3. I guess they do it in stages, kind of like hurricanes, in a matter of speaking. No pun intended, the fact that he was a hurricane, wasn't he? Wasn't Aaron Hernandez? He was a Miami player, wasn't he? Or was he a Gator? No, he was a hurricane.
Yeah, he played for Miami, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I don't want to get off into that. Aaron Hernandez was a bad dude going all the way back into his college days, did a lot of really bad things, was involved in a lot of horrific judgment situations long before he was ever, you know, in the NFL and had an opportunity to, have the violent impacts that everybody is blaming right now for, you know, CTE. We know where this is going. Again, I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm really trying to sort all this out without getting too confusing and twisting and turning these things around. CTE, we know, is being studied. We know that there was a recent study which got a lot of people upset, a lot of people, that is 99 out of 100 NFL players or former NFL players' brains that were tested, football players' brains that were tested had CTE. And people said, see, look what that means. 99% of the people who play football are going to have CTE. They're going to have brain issues. And that's not true. That was a closed study, specifically 100 brains that were turned over to science for study because the families of the loved ones who died had exhibited signs of some kind of CTE. It was a ridiculous study and ridiculously presented by the media, and it just created all kinds of fury and concern and fear and all of these things that you see when these types of things are erroneously reported. Well, I was so encouraged, I have to say, I was so encouraged to see a difference. I'll get back to the Aaron Hernandez part of this in a moment. I was so encouraged to read an article about 3 days ago that I have tweeted out, and if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen it. If you haven't, you should, Facebook, wherever. It was by a neurologist, by a brain doctor, who wanted everybody to know there's a reason why he coaches football for his son's team. And there's a reason why he allows his son to play football. Dr. Peter Cummings is his name. And he wrote a piece, an op-ed, which was intended to kind of quell all of the furor and the uproar over, football. I mean, quite frankly, youth football is in a very, very precarious position right now. There are a lot of people who will not let their kids play football because they hear stories about the CTE numbers that I just gave you, the Aaron Hernandez story, and these types of things. And it's just so much hysteria. And it's people jumping the gun, jumping to conclusions. And so I read a piece, Dr. Peter Cummings, board certified by the American, he is board certified by the American of Pathology and Anatomic Pathology, Forensic Pathology, and Neuropathology. He is an assistant professor of anatomy and neurobiology at Boston University School of Medicine, recognized medical expert by courts in 24 states and 6 different countries. the author of two forensic pathology textbooks. The guy knows the brain like anybody does. And his piece that he wrote, an op-ed, and I read it on Yahoo. I don't know if it was written for Yahoo or picked up by Yahoo Sports. But it's headlined, "I am a brain scientist and I let my son play football." And it's filled with facts that I don't have time to read to you, but facts about what CTE really is and how much is known about it, which is next to nothing. Next to nothing. It's extraordinarily important to point this part out. CTE, you probably do know by now, stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That's why they shorten it to CTE. It means damage to the brain caused by repetitive injury. What that does to people as they age and how it is caused is so unknown right now that the overreactive, fear-mongering anti-football set has grabbed onto it to make it appear as though this is what football causes. But there are no studies that have been done to say what other lifestyle choices combined with whatever level of CTE that somebody has may have made that condition much more damaging. In other words, is CTE impacted by alcohol? Is it impacted by prolonged drug use? Is it impacted by opioids? Is it impacted by, any number of things? And exactly how many different collisions does it take for that sort of thing to develop in an adult brain? And do hits taken by 12-year-olds impact that when we're talking about, you know, studying the brains of NFL players who are obviously much older and who have had a lot taken, harder shots to the head during their sports? This doctor just laid it all out and tore the fear mongerers apart. And I want people to read it because football is being killed. And when I say that, I don't mean that in any sort of a pun not euphemistically. I'm saying that it is a dying sport at the younger levels. More and more high schools are not able to field freshman or JV teams because they barely have enough to put a varsity team on the field. Now, it's not everywhere, obviously, but it is in more and more places because parents aren't letting their kids play football because they have been just scared to death about these CTE studies and these cases of NFL players saying, "I won't let my kids play," or these cases of NFL players retiring after 1 year in the sport, or cases of individual anecdotal cases where NFL players, former NFL players like Junior Seau and Dave Duerson, killed themselves. So there was a big move on to attack football, and this brain scientist says, "My son plays football," and if anybody says to me that I'm committing child abuse, here, read what I'm telling you. Here are the studies. So, that's part one of all of this. I wish I could read the entire article from Dr. Cummings to you to put all of that to bed. I can't, because I got to get to part two, which is the Aaron Hernandez story. Aaron Hernandez, the brain of Aaron Hernandez, studied after his death, which is the only way you can determine and diagnose CTE, was found by doctors to have had stage 3 out of 4 CTE at the CTE Center in Boston University. The doctor there who studied that brain, Dr. Ann McKee, said that CTE can cause violent mood swings, depression, and other cognitive disorders. It is not coincidental that this is the doctor hired by Jose Baez, the attorney representing Aaron Hernandez's family. And why? Because they have filed a lawsuit against the New England Patriots and the National Football League for $20 million. $20 million. Because they want somebody in medical science to prove that Aaron Hernandez murdered people because of CTE and that Aaron Hernandez killed himself because of CTE. They don't want it to be Aaron Hernandez's fault. They want it to be the NFL's fault. Even though he started his violent, thuggish lifestyle long before he ever made it to the New England Patriots or the National Football League. I'm going to play for you now the voice of Jose Baez. Again, one of the most reprehensible, money-grubbing defense attorneys who is willing to sell out anyone and everything, including the family of Odin Lloyd, who is the victim of Aaron Hernandez, convicted of murder, in order to make money. He sees the National Football League as the defendant in a lawsuit, and he probably, like a Pavlovian dog, starts foaming at the mouth, does Jose Baez. If you are wondering who Jose Baez is, by the way, he is. There's a reason why I call him one of the most reprehensible defense lawyers in the United States of America. He's also the piece of trash that helped Casey Anthony get away with murdering her little baby girl, if you follow the news. And that story also from Florida from a few years back. But I want you to hear just a quick short clip of an interview that Jose Baez did on SportsCenter, talking about his poor victimized client, the late Aaron Hernandez.
What have you heard from the NFL and from the Patriots since you filed this lawsuit?
We haven't heard anything. They haven't made a comment at this time. I expect they're going to review the lawsuit and then issue a statement at some point.
You said here, I'm quoting, if we knew more about his case of CTE, our client may have known more about what was happening to him. What do you think was happening to Hernandez?
I think he was struggling. I think he was struggling in a deep, dark place that many athletes suffer from.
He was struggling from being in a prison cell for the rest of his life without the possibility of parole. And he didn't like the idea of living like that, especially because he was getting into fights as people were challenging the big, bad NFL player. And he killed himself. And why was he in prison without the possibility of parole? Because he had already killed somebody else. Accused of killing three, convicted of one. Probably killed the other two, but got away on technicalities. We covered these stories a little bit when they happened. But this is, again, let's turn the murderer, Aaron Hernandez. This is the tactic of the attorney. Let's turn the murderer, Aaron Hernandez, into the victim here. He was struggling. He was in such a dark place. And it's all because his brain was damaged by football. And his brain was damaged by the New England Patriots. And his brain was damaged by the National Football League. Because they didn't tell him what was happening to him.
And this disease is no joke. It affects the one place that we know very little about. And that's the brain. How far does it affect what we do, what we think, what we say? There's still so much more that has to be studied, but there's one thing for certain. Aaron was very, very, very sick.
Aaron was sick. And Aaron was sick because of football, according to this attorney. Again, he sees the deep pockets of the National Football League. I'm surprised he and the family stopped at $20 million. I mean, because let's think about that. What does the NFL make on an annual basis? Couple billion dollars. If they believed any single sentence in the lawsuit that they filed against the National Football League and the Patriots, that the league negligently allowed CTE to develop in the brains of a young guy like Aaron Hernandez, but didn't care because they just had money to make. Get him out there catching touchdowns. Get him out there making blocks. We don't care about his health. If they believe that for a second, you think they'd stop at $20 million out of $2 billion, which is what they make in an average year? Hernandez killed himself in April, in case you forgot, in the prison cell where he was going to be serving the rest of 27. So assuming he lives the average lifespan of, 77 or so, which is, I think, what the average male lives to be in the United States, 50 years he had in front of him. Didn't like the idea, killed himself, and now the family says, pay us. Give me $20 million because for the loss of companionship of our beloved Aaron. Well, how much of a companion were you going to be, or were you going to get, were you going to be for him, and was he going to be for you when he was in prison for the next 50 years? I have just had enough of money-grubbing, filthy, lying defense attorneys like Jose Baez, who has already allowed one murderer to go free, talking about Casey Anthony, and that's away from the sports story that we're talking about here. But now he's doing it with Aaron Hernandez, and now that Hernandez is dead, and he's trying to blame football, which just further goes to scares. That's, again, where the confluence of stories comes in. It just, you know, it furthers the ongoing lie that football in and of itself is going to cause brain damage to every kid that plays it. They're going to have CTE. They're never going to be able to have normal lives and all of these kinds of things. There have been thousands upon thousands and thousands of NFL players who have started in the league and then retired and then grown old and died without ever killing somebody because of CTE. They don't do it. Because it's a lie. Because he wasn't killing somebody because of CTE or himself. He killed people and ultimately took his own life because he was a violent thug from a very young age. A gang member. And now we're supposed to feel sorry for him. And the story of CTE is opened up all over again. And you got Vince Wilfork, you heard in the montage there, you know, talking about how dangerous this is. And Adam Schefter talking about CTE and what we know and what we don't know. This is not a CTE story. Aaron Hernandez is a thug murderer who decided he'd rather die than spend the next 50 years seeing striped sunlight. And I'm tired of the sport that I love continuing to be attacked in general, and especially in order to defend a piece of garbage like him. All right. I had to get all of that out there. I told you, I don't have a ton of time for the montage today because we got a lot to get into a lot of other things. We got guests coming up. But I had to lay all that out there. I've been sitting on it all day as I've listened to Jose Baez speak, and I've read all of these stories about the lawsuit. So it's just so much trash. It had to be done. Okay. We'll get back into that later if we can. But for now, since it's 3:30, let's get us a wild stat.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Baseball streaks, the wild stat of the day, good and bad for the Dodgers and Indians. How bad? Well, for the Dodgers, the Indians are just about to overtake the Dodgers for the best record in all of baseball. Right now, they stand one game behind. How stark is closing the gap between the two? Well, consider this. Back on August 24th, what's today, Kush? September 22nd.
September 22nd.
Less than a month ago then. Less than 1 month ago. The first day of the Indians' winning streak. They were 20 games behind the LA in the standings. They closed 19 out of 20 games in a span of less than a month. As of today, the gap is just one after the Indians swept the Angels last night and the Dodgers snapped their four-game losing streak. But it is just one, and the Indians are indeed not slowing down whatsoever. But that is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. I got Sammy Hagar tickets coming up for you after the bottom of the hour break. You got to pay attention for that. And we're also going to talk to our good friend Scott Petrak with some NFL preview for this weekend coming up right here on the ticket.
Team.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We're going to turn it around now at 3:38. Thanks for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You're going to turn around from all of that negativity surrounding the Aaron Hernandez story and the lie that they continue to tell, trying to martyr and victimize Aaron Hernandez, turn him into the victim rather than the thug gang affiliate that he was. Let's talk about football today and talk about football this weekend. Got a lot of good NFL stories to discuss. How about the Cleveland Browns being road favorites for the first time, I want to say, in like three decades? All right, it's not exactly that long, but it's been an awful long time. And joining us now to talk about the Browns and more is our good friend Scott Petrak, Browns beat writer who runs the website BrownsZone.com. BrownsZone.com, if you're a fan. Check that out. You won't get better coverage of the Browns anywhere. Scotty Petrak, thanks for joining us, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Bobby. How are you, bud?
I'm good. I'm amazed. I mean, honestly, I mean, how bad are the Indianapolis Colts with Jacoby Brissett playing quarterback? You know, given the situation, the Browns are 3-32 in their last 35 football games. They have one road victory in that span. In other words, there's no more sure thing in sports than the Browns playing a road game and losing. Well, at least over the course of the last two seasons plus. And now they're actually a Vegas favorite at Indianapolis. What's going on?
Yeah, it just speaks to, I think, Indianapolis's struggles, inability to score in the first 2 weeks. You know, but it's interesting. I mean, it certainly is. You know, and I think the Browns have played better than Indy through the first two games. But I was stunned when I saw that the Browns were a favorite, you know, even if it's a point. I'm still surprised. It's been, you know, like 20 months, 22 months since they won a road game at all. So, yeah, it's stunning. You know, when you look at the quarterbacks, and that's a lot of what Vegas goes down, boils down to, and there's no reason to think that Kizer gives you the edge over Brissett. Brissett's played a little bit more. You know, he had a decent game last week. Kizer had a terrible game. So it's unusual, but, you know, I actually think the Browns are going to win this one, so maybe Vegas got it right.
Okay, well, let's talk about it. Maybe so. Why do you think that? And kind of include in that your analysis of Deshaun Kizer and what happened a week ago. You know, he had so many people really, really excited with his debut against the Steelers, expected to be a, you know, Super Bowl contender. Baltimore, a very, very good defense, as we saw last week, but not supposed to be on par with the Steelers as a team. So he plays very well against Pittsburgh, but then goes on the road to Baltimore and obviously throws the three interception and has people wondering, is he the future that we want, you know, for the Cleveland Browns or not?
Sure. You know, I do think Hugh Jackson has a point, you know, when he said it was yesterday and he kind of lectured the media and I think the fans and maybe even, you know, as a way for him to talk to some people in his own building that there's going to be ups and downs when you have a rookie quarterback, especially one that's only 21 years old. Didn't play a ton in college, you know, is on a bad team, you know, walked into a bad situation. You're going to have plenty of ups and downs. And we saw a pretty significant down against the Ravens. I mean, that was pretty much as poorly as you can play as a quarterback. Four turnovers, you know, not to mention the migraine, but four turnovers just didn't look good. Didn't look nearly as comfortable as he did in that open against Pittsburgh. Having said that, I think Kizer's the kind of guy that has the kind of makeup that he'll bounce back from that. And I think Indianapolis provides that opportunity. Their defense is not very good. You know, they have decent numbers against the run, not against the pass. Their number one cornerback, Vontae Davis, hasn't played all year. He's listed as doubtful. So I think the Browns offense will have opportunities to score. And I think Kizer will play better than he did against Baltimore. And on the flip side, I think this is the first chance for this Browns defense to really dominate. It's hard to do that against a Pittsburgh team with as many weapons as Pittsburgh has. And it was tough to do against Baltimore when your offense turns the ball over five times. So I just think it has the potential to all come together this week and you see kind of a complete game from the Browns. And if that happens, then I think they beat an Indianapolis team that's probably on par with them from a talent standpoint.
Scott, let me ask you this. Did you talk to Deshaun at all this week in any of the media availabilities?
Yeah, we talked to him Monday and Wednesday.
How much, if at all, did he blame the migraines for the performance? Or were they separate from one another? He had the migraines, got it cleared up, he felt better, he came back in, and the performance was just, you know, defense-related as far as what Baltimore did to him or his timing being off, for example, on the interception in the end zone. Do the two have anything to do with one another, how he played and the migraine?
Well, he said that once he came back from the migraine, mm-hmm. he was fine. That he felt completely fine. He did acknowledge that before he left the game, so we're talking end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter, on that interception to Duke Johnson, it was a third down throw. They were kind of on the edge of field goal territory. He had Johnson coming across on a little short underneath route, and Kizer throws it out in front of him. It goes off his hands for an interception. He said by that play, his vision was compromised. His head was pounding. He didn't use it as, you know, that's why it happened. But we were trying to get kind of a sequence of events from him.
Right.
He said, I made the real long throw to Rashard Higgins. I felt fine. He said, then he had missed a motion. Like Hugh Jackson noticed it. He always sends a guy in motion, but Kizer wasn't on top of it. And it was unlike him. And then Hugh could sense that something was wrong. And that's when it kind of manifested itself. So, you know, I think it affected him for that interception, mm-hmm. but he kept saying over and over that once he came back, he was fine, and it was just inaccuracy after that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I mean, you know, especially, well, I guess it could be either way. I mean, if it was migraine impacted, his play was impacted by the migraines at all, then we have to talk about, okay, how often he's going to get these things. And I know there's been some of that history revealed. But if it's not about that, and he said, well, you know, it was just a matter of performance and things that a quarterback can always fix and that it will not be a medical condition that impacts it, so I guess that's a good thing. Now let's talk about the way the team looked offensively beyond that. Isaiah Crowell has made some statements this week that has gotten that have gotten some attention. It certainly got Hugh Jackson's attention. He wants the football more. He's carried, what, 27 times in two games, I think the number is?
Yeah.
And you know, he sees himself as being one of the elite backs. He even said that or in the off season when he was talking about, I think somebody asked him about the elite backs in the league, and he named two or three of them, and he said he feels like he's one of them. But he bases that on his yards per carry, particularly last year. He just doesn't get as many carries as other guys. Now here we are two games in, and that continues to be the case. Is he right? Does he need more carries? And how do you feel Hugh Jackson responds to that? Does he force feed him the ball against Indy? And is that just in response to Isaiah, or is it just the right thing to do?
Yeah, it, to me, Bob, it's a tricky situation because there's a lot of moving pieces to when a running back gets the ball, right? You have to be in the game. I mean, you can't be 21 points down because then pretty much every play caller abandons the run. You know, the offensive line, you have to have confidence in the offensive line. And Hugh Jackson repeatedly says to us, these five guys are still coming together as a unit and they're not where they need to be. And he recognizes that, so he doesn't feel confident running the ball as much as he will week five, week seven. But big picture, Crowell needs the ball more. He deserves it more. They're a better team when he's running more and they're running more because it takes pressure off Deshaun Kaiser. And, you know,
why
the Browns don't have the weapons.
Scott, why haven't they made that a priority in the first 2 weeks?
Well, I think the simplest reason, Bob, is because they've been trailing in both games. Now, we've had an argument inside the media room all week. If you're only down by 10 or 11 or 14, is it too early to abandon the run game? And I understand the arguments that say, yes, you still have to run it. You still have to pound the ball, commit to the run. However, I can see as a play caller why you feel like you're beating your head against the wall if you haven't had a lot of success. And Crowell has through the first two games. And he could blame not having a rhythm, but he still hasn't. The numbers haven't been great. So if you're Hugh Jackson and you're down by 14, I think when you're calling a first and 10 play, you say, okay, do I run it for 2 yards, face second and 8, and know we're going to probably have to punt, or do I take 3 chances throwing the ball because I think that gives me the best chance to pick up a first down, gain big yardage, and put myself in a chance to get back in this game from a scoring perspective. And I think all play callers fight that. And if you don't have it, if you're not rooted in the run game and you don't trust the run game, it's a lot easier to go away from it. And I think that's where Hugh Jackson is right now based on the line's chemistry and the way defenses are playing the Browns too. You know, they're stacking the box because they're saying, hey, let's let this rookie quarterback with no receivers beat us through the air. We're not going to let him beat us on the ground.
Yeah, and I think the key thing that you said there to me, Scott, is, you know, do I run it on first down and make it second and 8? If you're only assuming 2 yards, if you're just, you know, kind of accepting that you can't move the ball on the ground, that you can't get a 4-yard first down rush and make it second and 6, then you're right. You kind of are putting yourself in a box. Is he right? Is the line cohesion, chemistry, whatever it is you want to call it, incapable of getting 4 or 5 yards on first down?
Well, I think it was in week one and week two. We just, you know, for, I know it wasn't a lot, but let's say Crow's 27 carries. I don't think they were efficient enough in those carries. And I think that will improve. I'm not sure this is the perfect week because Indianapolis, the one thing they do well on defense is against the run. I think they're second in the league, giving up only 2.5 yards a carry. So it could be difficult. But I don't think can ignore the fact that defenses are geared up to stop this run game. And in today's NFL, you know, there's nobody in this league anymore that comes out and runs the ball 35 times a game. If that happens, it's because you have the lead and you're just trying to kind of kill the clock. You have to throw first to run. And I know that's against a lot of, you know, kind of Midwestern football philosophy, but that's the way this league has gone. And I think Hugh acknowledges that. And the only issue really is because he talks so much about how he wants to establish the run that it seems hypocritical. But I think in the back of his mind, he knows he has to throw first and he just wants to be in the lead so he gets the chance to really kind of run, you know, run often and keep going back to Crowell and get that rhythm. And this, the opportunity has not presented itself. So I guess in a nutshell, it's, I think as the season goes on, they'll be able to run the ball better, but I don't trust it right now, and I know Hugh Jackson doesn't trust it right now.
Yeah, and Jackson did say, and I read this in your piece on BrownsZone.com, that I'm going to give him the ball more, yes, he said, but if I do and when I do, he damn well better take advantage of it. This is, you know, this isn't something where, you know, where we're just going to do this to do it because we want to make you happy. You better produce or else it's just going to go back to, you know, we're going to have to go back to throwing, you know, 75% of the time.
Yeah, and that makes all the sense in the world. And I don't think the coaches feel insulted that Crow wants the ball more. In fact, his running back coach said, hey, I like that. He's being honest.
Yeah, he should.
But there is
back wants the ball as many times as he can get it. I'm not saying Crow is a great back, but you better want it. If you're happy carrying it only 10, 12 times a game, then you're probably not a real feature back.
Exactly, but there is a responsibility that goes along with that. If we're going to commit to you, and this is going to be a focus of our game plan, then you can't let me down. You know, and I think from a play call perspective, a lot of coaches trust their throwing play calls kind of more than their run play calls because you can scheme up something in the pass game. In the run game, you need guys to block, you need a guy to find the right hole, where it feels like in the pass game, if I call the perfect play, it's going to work. And I don't know if they feel the same way about the calling the perfect run.
I think that's fair to say, although it's a little more challenging given the rookie quarterback and the way you described it in your first answer of the interview, this rookie quarterback with no receivers. Can you count on a play that you can just dial up a pass play that's going to be more effective than the run with this group? And let's talk about that when you say no receivers. Corey Coleman, obviously out 8 weeks. He was the number one guy for what it's worth. Not that he was a Julio Jones, Antonio Brown number one guy, but he was their number one guy. And now he's gone. Kenny Britt has been awful. He was awful in the preseason. He dropped passes. He was awful in the opener against Pittsburgh. He's got two catches for like 15 yards, I think, in two games. He's never been a number one receiver, and now he's being asked. As a matter of fact, Hugh Jackson challenged him to step up and be the leader of that position group. What do you see, Scott? I mean, I don't see it in him, quite frankly. I don't know if I see the right attitude for a veteran like him. And I don't know if the talent is there in that receiving core to give DeShone Kizer the opportunities he needs for success. What do you think?
No, I agree with you on the second point, 100%, Bob. I just don't think they have enough talent. And, you know, they're try-hard guys. You know, Rashard Higgins had a nice game last week when he got booked to the practice squad. But I wouldn't expect to see that every week. You know, I think he's limited physically. I do think Ricardo Lewis has some upside. He's fast. He's strong. He's got some size to him, and he's going to get the start in place of Corey Coleman. So I think there's a reason to at least pay attention to him. And then you got guys like Jordan Leslie, who they just brought back to the practice squad and elevated him today. Mm-hmm. Kasen Williams, who's slow and was waived by Seattle. There's just nobody on that receiver corps that you go, hey, you know, we got to double team this guy. We got to pay a bunch of attention to him. When you feel the opposite way when the Browns play teams like, or guys like Antonio Brown, or even Jeremy Maclin last week with Baltimore. Those are guys with track records. Those are guys who can change games. And I don't feel that way about anybody on the Browns receiving corps. And Kenny Britt has been a huge disappointment, a big disaster. I did see Kenny's attitude to me change this week, at least when we talked to him. And I think if he's going to do anything this year, it's going to have to be in these next couple of weeks. He's going to have to establish himself as that veteran, is a guy that they paid the money to, and step up to fill part of that void left by Corey Coleman. Now, he's got to do it on the field. Nothing he says to the media is going to matter. Nothing he does in practice is going to matter. So I think he's got a window here where he can make himself worthwhile, but it's only going to, you know, it's going to depend on can he make those plays against the Colts and the week after against the Bengals. And to this point, he's given us no reason to believe that he will.
We're talking to Scott Petrak, talking about the Browns, week number three. They're at Indianapolis, and they are road favorites, believe it or not. Vegas actually thinks they have a better chance here, despite everything that we're talking about. What about Myles Garrett? I understand leaps and bounds have been made in this last week and that there's a chance he could go. What's the status, and have you talked to him? How does he feel about it?
We've not talked to him. He has not been in the locker room all week. He hasn't officially practiced any of the days, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. I saw him working on the side with trainers. I saw him do a little bit of jogging. Hugh Jackson said he has begun to run. I don't think there's any way he plays Sunday. I'm not sure why they're leaving the door open just a slight bit with that doubtful designation. The guy was still in a walking boot Monday. So you know, it seems premature. It seems like you don't want to risk bringing this guy back too soon when, you know, you want him for the final, whatever it is, 13, 12 games of his rookie season. So I don't think he'll play against the Colts, but it's a good sign that he's getting closer. I think that means Cincinnati game next week is definitely in play for him, as long as he doesn't have a setback. And they need him because that pass rush hasn't been what they want it to be. And I know Big Ben and Flacco get the ball out of their hands in a hurry, but it's a big drop off when you go from Myles Garrett to a guy like Carl Nassib. So they need him back for Greg Williams' defense to be what he wants it to be.
Scott, looking at the matchup against the Colts, are you with Vegas on this? You said at the beginning you really think the Browns actually can win this. Are you picking them to win this game, and if so, by how many?
Yeah, you know, I'm picking them 20-14. I think maybe the defense gets a score, the offense moves the ball a little bit, and I just don't think Indianapolis has the firepower, not to keep up, but to run away from the Browns. So I think they're going to be in the game, and, you know, it probably comes down to one play. It wouldn't shock me at all if the Colts have the ball in the last minute and they're trying to throw a Hail Mary to win the game. But I just think I've gotten a good vibe this week. I think the Browns know that the schedule gets easy for 3 weeks with Colts, Bengals, Jets, and they better take advantage of it. And this is the first chance where the first game of the year where they say, hey, we might be as talented as the opponent, so let's go get that win.
Yeah, and without Andrew Luck there, you do. I mean, truthfully, if you can't win a game like this with you know, the Colts being in the state that they are right now, and they played better last week, by the way, in losing only by three to, what was it, Zona, I think?
Arizona in overtime.
Yeah, they looked a little better than they did in week one. But if you can't win this one on the road, I mean, honestly, people are going to start talking about, oh, my God, you know, we may indeed be looking at 1-15 again. If we can't beat Jacoby Brissett or Tolzien or whoever they throw out there, it's really looking that bad. So they've got to get this. You know, there's no such thing as a must win for a team that's coming off of a 1-15, honestly. But if you really want to make those strides and gain some confidence and give your fan base some confidence, it's must win in that regard. Scott,
Bobby, you're stealing the lead.
Go ahead.
You're stealing the lead I got for my game preview. It's all about must win in this 3-game stretch. They got to win two out of this three, or else it goes south.
Wow. Oh, well, you know what? I didn't realize that, but I'm glad to hear you say that because we agree then. And you're right; it really does go south in a hurry. We always love your coverage of the Browns, but I always like to ask you questions on the rest of the schedule too, or at least some of the big games. I don't know if there's any bigger than 2-0 Atlanta and 2-0 Detroit in the NFC. Yeah. That's right. The Lions got off to a good start. They haven't exactly played world beaters, but they dominated last week. I think Eli Manning and the Cardinals. And the Giants. They sacked him 5 times. Detroit is hosting the NFC champions. So what do you see happening? Matt Ryan and the boys really put one on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in a rematch of the NFC title game. What do you see happening up at Ford Field?
Yeah, that's a good matchup. You know, I think I favor Atlanta a little bit just because how explosive they are offensively. And, you know, I saw part of that game against against Green Bay. I saw part of the Lions game against the Giants. And they just feel like they're more explosive offensively. I like a lot of stuff I saw from the Lions, especially defensively. Ziggy Ansah, who I loved when they drafted him, had a big game, and I think he's a big-time player. But I would take Matt Ryan and all his weapons versus Matthew Stafford and the guys around him.
Yeah, and you know what? The quarterbacks are both very good there. And, you know, Matthew Stafford, we've talked about many times, he's now the highest-paid player. And he's the weird thing about that game that's coming up is the way that the Lions won. It wasn't the traditional Stafford throws for 350 and 4 touchdowns because they can't run the ball. They actually ran the ball for more yards than they passed in the win over the Giants. 138 yards on the ground, 122 yards in the air for Stafford. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach the Atlanta Falcons. If they can run the ball like that again and keep Matt Ryan off the field a little bit, certainly that would work in their favor. Not a lot of other really great matchups, I don't think, on the schedule. I'm interested in a couple of other games, but they're not massive in terms of like 2-0 against 2-0, Super Bowl contender against a Super Bowl contender. So I'm just going to ask you about a team that impresses me a ton, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. Kareem Hunt leading the NFL in rushing, the rookie out of Toledo, in just after 2 weeks and putting 5 touchdowns on the board. At the Chargers, who don't really have a home advantage at all. They only drew 25,000 last week. How do you see that one?
Yeah, and you know what? I've been really impressed with the Chiefs as well. And Kareem Hunt, you know, I love talking to him at the combine. I thought he'd be a good pick for the Browns in the mid rounds, just as a guy that they could, you know, replace Correll with if Correll left in free agency. And to me, he's a steal for the Chiefs. I do think this is a little bit of a, you can't call it a trap game in week three, but I think the Chargers have been better than that 0-2 record. It's inside the division. You know, Phillip Rivers had a rough year last year. It just feels like a game that's going to be close. I'm not going to predict a Charger upset, but I think it's going to be closer than you would think ever after having looked at the first 2 weeks.
Does Green Bay bounce back from that whooping they took from the Falcons, hosting the hapless Bengals?
Yeah, I think that's a terrible matchup for Cincinnati. You know, Aaron Rodgers should throw for a bunch of yards. You know, you don't know. Cincinnati's had a long, you know, they had the extra time because they played on a Thursday night. They changed coordinators. That could create a spark. They might be able to score more than they had the first 2 weeks, but I don't think they're going to be able to score nearly enough to keep up with Aaron Rodgers. So I like Green Bay in that one.
I don't think there's any other matchups I'm interested enough to ask about, Scott, so I'm just going to end this by saying thank you. Thank you for BrownsZone.com. I'm going to tell you how easy you make my job. I mean, for those who don't know our business, show prep is when you've got to, you know, look up all of the latest stories and the factoids and the statistics and everything else that you need about what you're going to talk about. And you make show prep easy. I have one site to go to get all of it, honestly, and that's BrownsZone.com. I don't got to leaf my way through six different sports sites to see what six different groups of people think about the Browns matchup this week. I find it all there. So thanks for making my job easy, my man. And keep up.
I appreciate it, Bobby.
You got it. Thank you,
Thank
Scott.
Thank you, sir.
Scott Petrak. Find him online at BrownsZone.com. It is really the comprehensive Browns place to be. All right. Hey, you know where the place to be is if you are looking for car sounds. We're talking about Car Stereo One, obviously. But I want to tell you now about window tinting. You also go to Steve at Car Stereo One. That's right, the window tint special right now from Steve at Car Stereo One. Go in. Their new location is at 3120 West Central. And ask Steve for the window tint special. You're going to just tell him what shade you want. You choose it. And he's going to get it done for you for just $149. That's right. Any shade from Car Stereo One for just $149. And that comes with a lifetime warranty. To get that special window tint pricing, go see Steve at Car Stereo One and mention the code word turtle. You tell him turtle, you get your tint on for just $149. More details on window tinting and car audio online at carstereo1.com. All right, coming up in hour number two, we're going to have those Sammy Hagar tickets I told you about. We'll give those away. We're also going to have a qualifier in the next 30 minutes for the European Flyway. That's right, the tickets European vacation. All of that still to come, and high school football preview with Bill Clark as well in hour number two of the Extravaganza.
In this league, to score points, you got to have explosive plays, or unless you can just methodically move the ball down the field, play, you know, 12-play drives, 13-play drives, and that doesn't happen a lot against these defenses. Some of these defenses are really good, so when you have a chance to have an explosive play, you want to get it. That being said, we've done some things that way, but turnovers don't let us do some of the other things we want to do by throwing the quicker passing game and doing those things. We have a variety of things that we like to do that we haven't just been able to do yet, and we're working through that. I think we'll start seeing more phases of our offense as we move through this season. You know, obviously the quicker you can get the ball out, the better it is for the offensive line, the better it is sometimes for the quarterback, but everybody knows that, just what you just said. So defensive coordinators are starting to sit on that. It's a chess match every week. As an offense, you want to be able to dictate, and then there's some games you got to take what the defense is giving you, and that's just part of it.
I certainly hope that we'd be more productive on offense and that we would be 2-0 right now, but when you do have a rookie quarterback back there, obviously everyone else has to raise their game, because no matter how good they are as rookies, how prepared they are, Deshaun's as prepared as any rookie I've ever been around, but there's still a huge gap with what they know and understand versus a quarterback that's been in the league 8 or 9 or 10 years.
I think it's on us now to get back to the drawing board and, you know, prepare as well as we can to, you know, come out and play well against Indianapolis. You know, you go 4-0 in the preseason and you get a little taste of winning in your mouth. And you could feel in the locker room the vibe was, you know, ecstatic. Everyone was excited to get out there. Obviously going through you know, two losses in our first two regular season games kind of took that away from us. Now we want to get back to that.
everybody understands who they are. I mean, it's a heck of a team. I mean, it's no doubt about that. But, I mean, for us, every single week, there's an outstanding team that you play with outstanding talent. So we take them one at a time as they come. It's the biggest game of the year for us because it's the next one. And that's how we look at it. I mean, you think you have a good feel for it, but it's just like anything else. You have to get matched up against some folks before you really start to say, you know what, you may believe we're pretty good. I think we're pretty good. The proof is in the pudding. Let's go see. Let's go see how we measure up. Let's see how we match up. You know, I get excited about that end of it. And yeah, you think you know. You think you have an idea. And I don't think there's any season that any coach goes into thinking the opposite of that. If he does, he better get in a new line of work. You know, we all look forward to that great challenge, and we all want to see where we are, and we think we have an idea, but you know, let's see how it plays out.
It was a little bit eye-opening for me when I heard, we hear about this CTE, and obviously as football players and just people in general, and you're trying to figure out what is this and how does this occur. And I think the more we gather information and the more information we have is good for everyone involved, whether you play football or not. How did it take place for this young man at a young age? That's what I want to know. I mean, he's 27 years old. I mean, he hadn't played that much football in his life.
All I know in this particular case, the league has not seen a copy of the suit and that they were unwilling to comment at this time. There are a lot of concerns with this, right? It's become a very trendy, apropos, disconcerting topic for the NFL. It's
playing the game that we play is risk in the game. I try not to think about that, but I know it's a good possibility just because of, you know, playing a game at a high level, it's always a possibility in the future. I don't think this is going to go anywhere. You can change all the helmets you want to change. As long as you're tackling and hitting each other, it's going to always be some type of concussion or some type of risk involved in football. We can cut that out about let's change helmets and let's change this. The fact of the matter is, it's a collision sport. So it's going to be things that happen. I don't care, you know, how much you want to change, but I'm not saying don't change, but you have to understand, as long as there is contact in sports, you're going to have problems.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed, and hour number two is underway a little bit later than normal as we really were jam-packed today, but a great conversation with our friend Scott Petrak as well. In fact, that conversation, Kush, went so well and so long, it blew right through the Sammy Hagar ticket giveaway. So I want to do that right now. If you like to rock and you want to go see one of the great frontmen of his era, how about Sammy on Wednesday of the 27th? That's coming up very soon, obviously, at the Toledo Zoo. How about caller number five? Caller number five right now at 866-240-1065. Let's make Jim Cushland answer the phones. 866-240-1065. Caller number five, you got the tickets to Sammy Hagar coming up on Wednesday at the zoo. All right, and also coming up before the bottom of the hour, by the way, we will have for you another chance to qualify for our Ticket European Vacation. Chance to fly to any one of six different European cities by way of Toledo Express and Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll tell you all about that coming up before the end of this half hour. Coming up at 4:40 or so next half hour, Bill Clark talks high school football with us. As Central Catholic, Deshaun Kaiser's alma mater, now 4-0, getting into track play and still looking terrific. So we got Central Catholic football on the air tonight, and we'll tell you about their matchup with 3-1 Clay, along with a couple of the other big matchups in the area with Bill Clark, coming up at about 4:40. I want to spend a little bit of time now, though, talking about the activism side of things when it comes to NFL players. Normally, I wouldn't do this on a football Friday as we get ready for the games, but they're kind of forcing it, especially now that we know what has happened as four NFL players, some of the biggest activists in the game, including Michael Bennett of the Seahawks, who sits during every national anthem, along with Marshawn Lynch, who sits in every national anthem. Bennett has taken to putting the fist of power, if you will, into the air after sacks now. Four players have asked the NFL to do something extraordinarily controversial because it is going to be extraordinarily divisive for a whole lot of people. And this is at a time when I don't think, quite frankly, the National Football League can afford to be controversial and divisive. And here's why. This story from the Hollywood Reporter. The NFL's TV ratings slide, which started last year, has continued through the first couple of weeks of this year, and they have become so precipitous that they have worried Wall Street. Here's what we're talking about. CBS, ESPN, Fox, and NBC generate roughly $2.5 billion in NFL advertising revenues in a season. But even a 10% shortfall could translate to a $200 million cut in earnings. That's a major, major loss, obviously. Well, the NFL is on its pay on a pace to do just that. Ratings woes continue in week 2. Wall Street is taking notice. Given that there are fewer excuses for falling viewership than there were a year ago when Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were distracting TV-watching Americans. You remember that, right? The NFL said, no, last year. Our game is just as popular as it's always been. It's just that there's other things that are going on that people are concerned about. An extraordinarily, I've used that word 3 times this segment, sorry. But an incredibly contentious and divisive presidential election was going on last year during the season, or at least for the first part of the season through November 8th, and people were watching that instead of games sometimes. It's okay. Well, that's not happening this year, and the ratings are continuing to slide now for the second straight year. While NFL games remained some of the most watched content on television, ratings slid 12% in the opening weekend. And even without dramatic weather like Hurricane Irma, it continued to the second weekend was off 15% year over year as well. Some people said Irma might have been why it was down a little bit in week 1. Okay, well, what about week 2? No, not so much. There was an 8% rating slump last year, so now we're off to 12 and 15% drops in weeks 1 and 2. Guggenheim Securities analyst Michael Morris said he has been optimistic heading into the new season because audiences would appreciate some of the changes, including fewer commercial breaks and allowing players to celebrate touchdowns creatively. Now, though, early results do not support this optimism. What is keeping people away? Well, according to many analysts, fans are just turning the TV off because they're disgusted by the ongoing displays of activism, political activism, and cultural activism going on the field, sometimes on the sideline, disrespecting the American flag and the national anthem, other times on the actual field of play now. Which brings us to this, and I'll go back to use the word I used a few minutes ago, extraordinarily controversial memo. 10-page memo sent by 4 league players. These 4 players that endorsed and signed the memo, Michael Bennett of the Seahawks, Malcolm Jenkins of the Eagles, former Buck, he has been sitting during the anthem or kneeling as well, Philadelphia's Torrey Smith, and former player who just retired from the Bills, Anquan Boldin. They're the 4 names on it. The memo was sent to the league commissioner, Roger Goodell, and to the executive vice president of football operations, Troy Vincent. The memo, in a nutshell, again, it's 10 pages long, but in a nutshell, they want the league to declare the month of November as Activism Awareness Month, just like they declare the month of October as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we all know that in the month of October, what does the NFL do? It stages basically the pink out, if you will. They turn everything pink. Flags are pink, socks are pink, shoes are pink, gloves are pink. Everything is pink in order to raise awareness for breast cancer, which is fine. Certainly, there is no divisiveness on combating, studying, and researching, finding ways to cure breast cancer. There's no divisiveness there, right? Well, asking for November to be Activism Awareness Month is not going to enjoy the same unanimity. It is not going to enjoy the same, hey, we all agree. Matter of fact, it's going to stir up some of the worst disagreements, and in fact, it's probably going to be very hostile in a number of ways for the National Football League. And it's something that a league that is struggling and suffering ratings declines probably does not want to involve itself in. Now, what will be so controversial about it? Well, judging from the memo, it's going to be racially motivated. And it is going to be anti-police. The memo specifically blames police for the shooting, for example, of Trayvon Martin a few years ago down in Florida, in Orlando, Florida. He was not even killed by a police officer. He was killed by a neighborhood watch volunteer who, according to all of the evidence and the trial, was being beaten by Martin during the moment that he shot him. They went on in this memo to specifically identify police officers as being the problem for ethnic minorities in the United States. They included in the 10-page memo the names and stories of Trayvon Martin, Alton Sterling, who, by the way, was somebody who was shot with while he was drawing a gun in a struggle with police officers. He was shot and killed at that time. Another one, Jordan Edwards, was shot and killed by a police officer who, by the way, was not found to be right in that decision. He was fired and has been indicted in a standing trial for murder in that case, which is exactly how it's supposed to work. But part of the memo reads the following, and this is where the league is going to be in a very, very precarious situation. The memo reads, "To be clear, we are asking for your support. We appreciate your acknowledgement on the call regarding the clear distinction between support and permission. For us, support means bear all or part of the weight of, hold up, give assistance to, especially financially, and able to function or act. We need support, collaboration, and partnerships to achieve our goal of strengthening the community. There are a variety of ways for you to get involved. Similar to the model we have in place for players to get involved, there are three tiers of engagement based on your comfort level. To start, we appreciate your agreement on making this an immediate priority. In your words, from protest to progress, we need action." End quote. So in other words, they're saying, we just don't want your permission to kneel on the sidelines during the anthem. We don't just want your permission to sit and disrespect the flag. We don't just want your permission to make political statements on the field of play after sacks or touchdowns. We want you to support it vocally and financially. In other words, they're asking for the National Football League owners and for the league officers to publicly and financially support their anti-police tirades, all while within stadiums being guarded by what? By armed police officers. You think the NFL wants this? You think the NFL can afford to do this? Do you think that the American people will stand for this? If you think the ratings slipping last year, in large part because of Kaepernick's, what he started, if you think that was something, wait until the NFL does agree to this. If they agree to November being the month of activism awareness, and it's being spurred by somebody like Michael Bennett, who made huge news just about a week and a half ago when he lied about being racially profiled by the Las Vegas PD the night of the Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor fight. You remember when Michael Bennett wrote on Twitter? He said that he was singled out and that they pointed their guns at him and threatened to blow his head off for doing nothing more than being a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time. Only to find out, even his attorney said, no, race was not a factor in what happened to my client. Because the police on video were shown responding to a call about an active shooting situation in a casino and assisted many, many black males in getting out of the area safely. But he claims he was singled out because he was a black male, when the fact of the matter was he was hiding behind a slot machine, and when officers turned toward him, instead of cooperating, he jumped over a four-foot barrier and ran into traffic as if he had something to hide. Naturally, he was chased. He was apprehended. He was cuffed and spent about 10 minutes in the back of a car until they ascertained that he was not a threat and they let him go. He turned it into, they profiled me because I'm a black guy. Now, this is the guy asking the league to have a month-long, we're black guys being persecuted because we're black guys, activism awareness campaign. Does he really think this is going to go? Do you really think that the league, which is watching those ratings slide again, can afford to let that happen? Well, I'm not saying he speaks for every owner, but he is one of the most prominent owners. How do you think Jerry Jones feels about it?
We are once again seeing these players kneel on the field, not your team, but others. How do you feel about what you're seeing and the disrespect you're seeing towards the American flag right now?
Well, I do not think the place to express yourself in society is as we recognize the American flag and all the people that have made this great country, the very opportunity for us to get be there in front of the nation. So that's not the place to do anything other than honor the flag and everybody that's given up a little for it.
Jerry Jones obviously does not speak for every NFL owner, but he holds a lot of sway with them, and that is his point of view. I suspect it will be backed up by probably almost every other owner, especially given the fact that every owner has decided at this point in time that they will not take on the circus that comes with Colin Kaepernick. All right, it is 4:30, so before we get a timeout for the Vada Baylor Sports Center, I told you by the time 4:30 came around, we would hook you up with another opportunity to qualify for the Tickets European Vacation. ESPN 106.5, the Ticket, has a chance for you to fly to one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. To qualify, be the fifth caller right now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. And you can do this once a day, every weekday afternoon, when we give you this cue to call. Or you can also register one time at 1065theticket.com. It's brought to you by Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. All right, so we're going to get a bottom of the hour sports center coming up here while we find our qualifier. And we're going to talk high school sports, high school football to be precise, with the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan, Mr. Bill Clark. That's coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed as we roll onward. 21 minutes of outstanding awesome left on the extravaganza. Then we turn it over to the awesomeness of Drive Time with Mike Miller, even though Mr. Jim Cushlin will be in the big chair for Mike coming up tonight. Big night on the high school football field, as well as the undefeated Central Catholic Fighting Irish at 4-0 are going to be taking on Clay. It's a 6:30 pregame and a 7 o'clock kickoff. The man who will be giving you all of the action is, of course, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio, Mr. Bill Clark. And Mr. Clark joins us now right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Bill, how are you, my man?
I'm fine, Bob. How are you?
I'm great. Always good on I love Fridays because it just starts the whole weekend of football. Even though we had an NFL game last night, and later on in the fall, of course, we'll get to midweek college football games as well. But for now, this is the start of an entire weekend of football, so I love it. All right, Bill, let's start with those Irish. Once again, they continue to get things done, whether they're playing in-state, out-of-state, or in-country, out-of-country. 4-0. And they've got, they're on the road at Clay, which is off to a good start at 3-1 in the track. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think Clay is a very good surprise team right now. John Gallius has been involved in the Clay program for a very long time. He played at Clay. As a matter of fact, he was part of the last team that won a championship at Clay back in 1985, I believe, when they were still in the Great Lakes League. He's been an assistant coach out there for like 16 years. He's been involved in Oregon football out there for many, many years, and this is his dream job. And he's got the Eagles playing very well right now. Their only loss was to Northview, and Northview is undefeated right now. So I can't remember the last time a Clay team started 3-1. We're going to find out that information tonight when I talk to John Gallius, and we'll have it on the broadcast. But it's been few and far between that after four games, Clay is 3-1. As far as the Fighting Irish go, they're coming off a game where they finally came out of the locker room and played well from the opening gun. That was the big difference last week against Lima Senior. I mean, they gave up a Troy Durden fumbled on a pass attempt, and it was scooped up by Juwan Williams of Lima Senior. He took it 65 yards for a score, but that was the only time Lima Senior got into the end zone last Friday night. The Central defense has just been stellar all year, giving up about 12 points a game. The offense started very well for the first time in four games. And normally it's been like, well, they kind of get started slow and then pick it up in the second half and then end up winning the game. But last week, Greg Dempsey was very happy with the way the kids came out. And they had to, because Lima Senior is a formidable opponent. They're a good track team. They did not play well last week. The Irish took them out a lot of their offensive capabilities. They had great skill positions, but the Irish took a lot of that away, and they were able to really put a whooping on the Spartans, 37-6. This week, this is a trap game. I mean, this is the term that everybody's been talking about all week, is the fact that it's a trap game, because next week, of course, it's the Whitmer Panthers coming over to the Gallagher to take on Central Catholic. Everybody knows about it. It's not a secret. It'll be a gigantic game. It will be the game next week, no doubt about it. But the Irish have to take care of business tonight, and they're playing at Clay. The Eagles have a brand-new turf. They've got a brand-new press box, and they got a brand-new attitude, to be honest with you, Bob. And it should be a very interesting game. Clay's got the number two passer in the track. They've got the number two receiver in the track. Central's got the number three running back in the track. So it's going to be a good game, and Central will have to, again, get off to a good start, because sometimes if you get off to a bad start on the road, it can snowball because the home team all of a sudden thinks, well, you know, maybe we can beat these guys. So the Irish can't give Clay an opportunity to get that feeling. So it'll be an interesting game. I feel confident that the Irish will win, but it's not a laydown by any stretch of the imagination just because Clay is playing so well.
Bill, how does Greg Dempsey prepare for trap games? He's had them, obviously, almost every year because almost every year he's got a massive showdown game coming up at some point or another, you know, with another state power, with a local power in the conference, or whatever the case might be. You know, he's had these moments where you can't let the kids get, lulled into a sense of complacency because they're only focused on next week. They've got to take care of the business's hand. And he's done a great job of it. So how does he make sure that they stay focused on Clay and not look ahead to Whitmer?
Well, he basically, Bob, he tells the kids every week, you know, every time we go on the field right now, they're the king of the mountain. Now, Greg doesn't use that term. That's my term. But the point is, they're the best team. They've been the best team in the track for the last 4 years. They've won 29 straight. And he points out to his kids every week, you know, the other locker room is saying, hey, Central hasn't lost a track game since the end of 2012, so let's see if we can be the one that stops that streak. So everybody's going to give Central their best shot, and the kids and the Fighting Irish coaching staff knows that, and they impress that upon the kids. They really make sure that the kids don't think, hey, all we got to do is show up and throw our helmets on the field, and we're going to walk away with a win, because that doesn't happen. The track is probably one of the best, if not the best, leagues in the whole entire state of Ohio, and there are very few walk-away games. The fact that Clay is 3-1 this year instead of 0-4 is a big difference right there. That's the way they're playing. But Greg approaches these kinds of games very honestly and says, hey, this is a trap game, boys. You've heard it. Everybody's told you it's a trap game. You can't think about Whitmer tonight. You've got to think about Clay. And if you don't think about Clay, next week against Whitmer won't be as big. And you know that it's always come down the last 6 or 7 years to Whitmer and Central Catholic. So he's told the kids, you know, this is a big game. It's a big game for us, but it's an even bigger game for Clay, and they got to take care of business.
We're talking to Bill Clark, high school sports, high school football action. And before we move on to the next track game, and Jim Cushman will set you up with that one, congratulations to Scott Bachman of White House. He was the winner of the Sammy Hagar tickets for the performance on Wednesday at the Toledo Zoo. And also congrats to Brandon O'Hara of Maumee. He's the latest qualifier in our ticket European vacation giveaway. So congratulations to both of those winners. Jim Cushman, what else you got here for Bill Clark?
And you know what? Staying in the track with that Whitmer team we're talking about for next week. They're on the road. Undefeated 4-0 is Whitmer of the Panthers. They're on the road at 2-2 Fremont Ross. Obviously, they want to keep pace with Central Catholic for that very interesting showdown next Friday. But Fremont Ross, 500 so far to a start the year. How do you see this one stacking up, Bill?
Well, Cush, not to correct you, but Fremont Ross is playing at St. John's tonight.
Did I have the wrong one? I wrote the wrong one, didn't I?
Yeah, Fremont Ross, you're right about their 2-2, but they're taking a St. John's team on that's 2-2, and that's a big game for both of those ball clubs, if you want to stay on this game for just a minute. I mean, Fremont Ross, I think, along with Clay, is probably the surprise team in the track. They've come out of the gate very strong. They surprised Springfield and got Springfield off on the wrong foot because they took the Blue Devils out in week number one, and now they're taking on a St. John's team at St. John's that's still trying to find themselves. They've got good players at the skill positions, but a lot of people think Fremont Ross could surprise a lot of people, and I really don't think that would be a huge surprise tonight if they surprise St. John's at home.
Yeah, and that's true. And obviously St. John's wants to be able to keep pace as well in the rest of that. Talk to us about on the Whitmer front, though. They are still 4-0, and they want to keep pace, obviously.
Yeah, Whitmer is one of those teams that, again, they've got skill position players. And I'm not sure exactly who they're playing tonight.
I found my miscorrection when I wrote the wrong thing. They're on the road at Lima Senior, the same team the Irish played last week.
Well, that'll be a big game for them because Lima Senior plays very well at home. There's no doubt about that. And they're obviously licking their wounds from getting taken to the woodshed last week by the Fighting Irish. So I think they're going to be loaded for bear. But even they'll be on the road next week at Central Catholic. But, again, they've got to take care of business at Lima Senior. And I'm sure that Coach Winters is telling his kids, hey, next week loses a lot of its luster if we don't win tonight. So I'll take Whitmer on the road to set up that showdown next week.
Moving on to Bill Clark breaking down high school football games for us. Let's move to another big game, this one in the NLL, the Northview-Springfield game. That's 4-0 Northview at 3-1 Springfield. Looks to be a good one. Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that is a good game. It's a huge game for Northview because right now Doug Downing and his kids are trying to prove that they belong at the top of the NLL standings. And with that 4-0 start, they have done so already this year. Springfield will be without their head coach again, Pat Cacciardo. He's serving that second game of his suspension, so he won't be on the sidelines. Whether that affects them, I'm not sure. I'm sure that working practice this week, Coach Cacciardo has got his coaching staff together about exactly what he wants them to do. And the game is at Springfield, and I think Springfield's really got some stuff to prove. It's been kind of an up-and-down season for Springfield. They were picked to win the NLL, and rightly so, with Anthony Wayne right behind them. But I think tonight they're going to have their hands full with Northview, and I think this could come down to a field goal at the end of the game. And just the way Northview is playing right now, I'm going to give them the slight edge to pull a huge upset at Springfield tonight.
And Bill, if I can, to follow up on that, because it is so interesting to see a Northview here at week five still undefeated, because quite frankly, it wasn't all that long ago that Northview was kind of the bottom feeder of the Northern Lakes League, and their Sylvania partner Southview was going and winning titles. So talk to me about their feeling right now as they look like they're turning this program around.
Well, they definitely are, Cush, and one of the big reasons is that Doug Downing has been there now 4 years, so the kids that are out in the field for him have been with him for 4 years, and the fact that they've got Brandon Leach, that quarterback, I mean, he's playing big, and not the fact that he's 6'7", he has just been playing big. He's one of the better passers in the league, he's got a nice core of receivers, they've got a 1-2 punch at running back, and Doug Downing's got these kids believing in themselves, and don't think the fact that Southview is having a rough year doesn't enter into this. As Northview would like to be the kings of Sylvania. And as you said, Cush, for many years it's been Southview, but Southview's run into a couple of bad years, and Northview's kind of turning things around a little bit, and they're enjoying it. Nobody in Northview's feeling bad for Southview. There's no doubt about that. A huge rivalry there, but right now it's Northview who's getting a lot more plaudits than Southview, and I think tonight they could make a huge jump in the minds of Northern Lakes League football fans if they could pull off that upset at Springfield.
You mentioned Anthony Wayne a moment ago, too, so let's just go ahead and hit them staying in the NLL there with Anthony Wayne hosting Bowling Green. 3-1, or Anthony Wayne, BG 2-2?
Well, I think that's another one of those games. Anthony Wayne being at home, I think that's huge. Their running game is incredible. Max Cato is having an amazing year. Every time you pick up the paper, he's getting 30 or 40 yards and taking it to the house. They've got a good quarterback as well. They're at home. Bowling Green has got some decent players, but I think on the road it's going to be tough. Anthony Wayne, I'm telling you, we used to do games out there a long time ago when we would do different games every week before we started doing just Central Catholic, and it's a small college atmosphere. I mean, they've got RVs out there. It's amazing to go out there and watch a high school football game. The band, of course, everybody knows about the Anthony Wayne band, but from top to bottom, it's a very neat high school football experience, and I think it'll be a neat experience for the Generals tonight as they should declaw the Bobcats.
We're talking to Bill Clark with a preview of high school football tonight in week number five. It's hard to believe that this is the midpoint of the season for all of the area teams. Cush, what's the next game you want to hit?
The next game, I want to go to the Northern Buckeye if I can. Genoa 4-0. They're at Otsego 3-1. That jumps out at me because I'm used, Bill, to seeing Otsego near the bottom of the NBC standings. Genoa, of course, outstanding regular season record. That sounds like I'm a broken record. And just lining that up, this kind of has the feel of the NBC version of the Central Catholic track game. You got the undefeated power coming into the building of a team that usually in recent years hasn't played well, but off to a good start.
Yeah, they have been off to a good start, and I'm not sure if this has changed, but I heard earlier this week that Genoa might have lost their quarterback, and I don't know that for a fact. I'll just put that out there because I can't not confirm that, but obviously, that's huge, and, you know, in high school football, it's always how good are you, what's the next man up, and the fact that if that is the case, Genoa has to go to their number two quarterback. That may change a few things, but Paul Patterson and some of the comments were on our coaches' show this week, and they're still very confident with the people they're going to put on the field, whether it's the number one quarterback or the number two quarterback, but as you said, Cush, Genoa has been a power out there for a while, but I think it should be an interesting game, but normally, I would take the home team in this one if it's a toss-up game, but I just think Genoa may have too much, and I'll take the Comets on the road.
All right, Bill Clark, really great previews all the way around. Just a reminder then, the pregame tonight is at 6:30. The kickoff is at 7 o'clock. And we got a scoreboard show after that, do we not?
Yep. Indeed we do.
Absolutely. Bill Boyle will have that for you as soon as we finish things up at Clay.
So Central Catholic and Clay will be on the air. Make sure that you tune in for that, for the undefeated Fighting Irish. Bill Clark will be on the call. Bill, always enjoy the conversation on Fridays with you, and we certainly enjoy listening as well. So have a great call tonight, and we'll check in with you again next week.
Look forward to it, Bob. Thank you.
You got it, my friend. Thank you so much. Central Catholic and Clay. That'll be a 7 o'clock kickoff. And Jimmy, just to follow up on the Whitmer game, you know, the mistake there on Ross, that St. John's taking on Ross. Whitmer is, you know, he called it a trap game for Central Catholic, you know, playing Clay when they got that showdown next week. Whitmer's isn't as trappy because Lima Senior is, you know, not exactly a pushover. So, but you just wonder if their kids don't have their eyes on Central in the same way that Central's kids might have their eyes on Whitmer.
And sometimes that happens with the kids at these types of ages. But both teams, both Central and Whitmer, coached very well. I don't see it as much of a problem. And this is more of the quote-unquote trap than normal because Clay is off to such a good start. I mean, really, at the minimum, since the realignment of the old City League to create the track, Clay has quite frankly been at the bottom of the standings every single time out. So for them to start 3-1, that's a fantastic start for them. They want to be able to build on that. So this is more of a trap game, if you want to use that term, than it more times would have been, especially with Whitmer on the slate for next week.
Well, do not let yourself get trapped into getting your window tinting done at the wrong place. Get to a Car Stereo One and see my man Steve. That's where you know you're not going to be trapped there. You're going to get a great deal at Car Stereo One. You already know that's where you go for car audio, right? But the most popular window tint package in Toledo is at Car Stereo One as well. New location is 3120 West Central Ave. Just talk to Steve. Tell him what shade you want, and you've got it for $149. That's right. Any shade you want from Car Stereo One, just $149, and that comes with the lifetime warranty on the window tint. So get that window tint pricing, special pricing that it is. Go see Steve and tell him the code word turtle. Use the word turtle and you'll get your tint on for just $149. And also, for more details on the window tinting package and all of your car sounds needs, just click on carstereo1.com, carstereo1.com. Yeah, I mentioned to Bill Clark, Cush, this is such a great start to the weekend because they got great high school football on the air tonight. We got good stuff tomorrow with the Buckeyes and UNLV. You also have Michigan taking on Purdue and starting out Big Ten play for the Wolverines.
Also, incidentally, have a couple of fun college matchups, too, after Ohio State because that's the early block.
Okay,
we're going to have TCU at Oklahoma State. And then for your nightcap, UCLA out at Stanford. So a Big 12 and a Pac-12 matchup for you. But, Bob, I'm sorry to do this. I know you're thinking football, but I got to throw this in here because something just ended up breaking.
Uh-oh. What happened?
The Tigers have officially announced that he is not fired as of the moment. He's going to finish out these last week and a half, but Brad Ausmus, he will not be the manager for the Detroit Tigers
Brad
in 2018.
Brad Ausmus on the way out.
Can you dig it?
His contract was up after the season, they have now said that this is a statement from Al Avila, quote, as we transition the ball club in a new direction, I feel it's best we have a new approach and a fresh start with the manager position. Brad has done an admirable job under at times difficult circumstances, especially this season, and we appreciate his professionalism and dedication to the Tigers the past 4 years. So Brad Ausmus, he's going to finish out this last week and a half, but that is it. Tigers fans, well, you will have a new manager for 2018.
All right, I did the can you dig it, not to be personally mean or you know have any animosity for Brad Ausmus, but I know a lot of Tigers fans really felt like he shouldn't have been there for this year. They really weren't happy when Al Avila kept him on when he took over as the GM after the firing of Dombrowski. So I know a lot of people are excited about that change. Personally, I don't think it matters at this particular stage because of the rebuild that they're about to undergo and the number of young players that are going to be coming through the system in the next couple of years. It's not as if he's going to be the difference between a pennant and or no pennant, but I do understand if they're starting over with new players, why not start over with a fresh sound and a fresh look with a fresh manager so Brad Ausmus is out. So, Cush, I'm glad you shared that one as we wrap it up. I was just going to run through the obvious Falcons and Lions on Sunday at 1 o'clock at Ford Field, the defending NFC champs, and then, of course, the MAC games, as you do have a very interesting matchup for undefeated Toledo going down to Coral Gables to take on at the University of Miami. So the Rockets and the U, and then BG as Middle Tennessee State on Saturday as well. So full slate of stuff over the weekend that we will recap for you on Monday on a program we like to call Monday Afternoon Quarterback. So we'll do that then. As for now, stay where you are because Drive Time is coming up next. Cushlin in for Miller right here on the ticket. We'll see you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.